Welcome back, everybody, to the Trade Raiders podcast, the comic book club, where we read a different trade paperback every single week. I'm Daniel. You're Nathan. We're brothers. We read comics.
We sure do. I'm so proud of how far you've come with doing the intro and not messing it up.
I think it's like one of the only things that I repeat.
Over
100 times for about 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't do the intro like well, or like even like had the intro kind of figured out until like the 20th episode or something.
Yeah.
We start off like, this is the Trade Raiders podcast, and we're going to read Batman.
I like that. Short and sweet. That's all you need to know. Sweet.
No, we got to say lots of stuff that sounds repetitive.
Yeah,
like we've said it a million times.
And then it just formed into what we call our intro, which is
definitely
beautiful now at this point.
Yeah, we could record it and just cut it in there, but people
are going to assume that we do that.
People want authenticity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. People are going to assume it's just something that we pre-record when it's perfect enough.
But so, Nathan, we have different segments in our show. We got the news, we got the book, we got Back Matter Matters, the poll list, and other things.
Yes.
And we have time codes in the description.
And I'm very excited for this episode. Lots of fun things to talk about.
Plenty.
So let's get started with the news, Daniel.
Biggest news, Nathan. Apparently, DMZ is out.
DMZ?
Yeah, remember that comic that has Rosario Dawson in it? And it's like on HBO Max? Apparently, it's out.
The comic?
There's a comic.
Called DMZ.
I think it's Vertigo or something.
Huh.
And there's we were told that we were getting a show, and it's out. I think it came out last week.
Is it good?
I don't know.
Do we love it?
Like, Dom, one of our guests on the Batman episode, he sent me a picture, and he's like, just question mark? With a question mark? And I'm like, it was a comic. I don't know what it is, though.
Oh, interesting.
So we didn't even get like a trailer. We might have, but no one told us about it.
It probably never came up on any of our social media algorithms.
Yeah, so, no.
Interesting.
It was very upsetting. But anyway.
Hopefully it's good.
Yeah. Should we read DMZ?
I don't even know what that is, but I'd be down at some point.
We got Moon Knight next week, so maybe the following week.
Yeah, we got Moon Knight next week.
No, and psych, Nathan. We got Morbius. Morbius book.
What's crazy about Morbius is that I'm not even remotely interested in seeing Morbius.
Nathan, will you go see Morbius with me?
Yes.
Let's go see it on
opening
night. What? No. What if it's good?
Can I bring Parker?
Yeah, dude. That'd be great.
That's our next installment of watching shitty movies with my friends.
With our friend Parker.
Yeah. Last time it was Bloodshot.
Yeah. Before that, it was The Predator, a.k.a. The Best Predator. The Best Predator.
Favorite Predator movie and favorite sci-fi movie, The Predator. Daniel.
Yes.
Have you heard of The Riddler?
I sure have, Nathan.
Well, Paul Dano is
Nathan?
He played the Riddler.
In what?
In the movie The Batman.
He sure did.
That came out this year.
Yeah, like
he's writing a Riddler Year One story, which is pretty cool. It comes out this October. It's called Riddler Year One, assumed to be set in the Batman universe, where he's starting his YouTube channel and he's like, "Hey guys, I'm the Riddler, and I hate Gotham."
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Thanks. Smash that like button and subscribe.
Turn on the notification bell. And stuff like that. So that's pretty cool. I don't know who the artist is because they just announced.
I didn't recognize
Riddler Year One, but they didn't credit the artist, at least in the DC post that I saw. But
yeah, and we're getting 6 issues of that.
That sounds pretty cool.
Which is really fun. I think it'll be good. Nathan, not really comic book news, but I thought it was exciting. I want to tell you about it.
Okay.
You know Mike Myers?
Uh-huh.
He hasn't really been in much lately.
He's going to be in the new Shrek.
He'll be in the new Shrek.
Uh-huh.
He's going to be in a new Netflix show about the Illuminati.
That's cool.
Coming May 5th.
Huh.
Yeah. Isn't that so random?
Is it like a documentary about the Illuminati, or the show is about the Illuminati?
The show's about the Illuminati.
Interesting.
Isn't that,
like seeing him do
just
stuff.
Just the premise sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Like,
is
of all the
serious?
People that I thought, yeah, like very serious.
Oh, I love seeing Mike Myers be serious.
I think actually might be a comedy.
Oh, even
and
better.
And he's like doing the thing where he's playing multiple people with like makeup and stuff.
I love when he's a big goof
around. Watch the trailer. It made me really happy.
That sounds fun. Daniel.
In other news.
Marvel's first comic goes for a whopping $2.4 million at an auction.
What was their first comic?
It's called Marvel Comics #1. Pretty clever, huh?
That was actually their first one?
Yeah.
Was anyone in it?
Yeah, the original Human Torch, which is like the android one.
Yeah.
And a couple other people. I can't remember specifically. But a comic book collector who's like anonymous or something. Yeah. But there's like a picture of him. So
he's anonymous, but there's a picture of him?
Maybe not anonymous, but... Oh, no. So it's Vincent Zerzolo. He's a COO and co-founder of Comic Connect with Marvel Comics. And no, that's the guy who's in the picture. It's because the article says an anonymous comic book collector. But Marvel Comics number one, the one that started it all, which is pretty neat.
Even if I have so much disposable money like that, I wouldn't.
$2.4 million on a comic, though?
I wouldn't.
I can go to the store right now, buy one for $2.
Yeah, dude.
That's not realistic. $3. $4.
If you're lucky, $3.
Dude, I went to the store today and they like overcharged me $15. And I didn't realize it until I sat in the cart. I went to go pick up my books today.
Yeah.
I picked up 4 books.
Yeah.
And the total was $33. And I was like, huh, that's a little steep. I guess I did ask for bags and boards this time. So then I like paid and I looked at the cost of the books all together and it was like $16. And I was like, no way, bags and boards are like $15. Yeah. So I went back in and they accidentally charged me for like a short box. So they credited me back. They were very nice about it.
Did you know that that shop has like an upstairs, apparently?
Ash?
Yeah.
Well, I want to go upstairs.
It's not in that building, but there's like in the back of the plaza or whatever, they have like an office. Huh. And there's like books in there.
Cool.
I'm like, what's in there? He's like, I don't know. So, because like, spoilers for the pull list, but I got the Dark Knights of Steel thing.
Cool.
The little trade or whatever. Nice. And he's like, oh, there might be some upstairs. I'm like, there's an upstairs?
I want to go upstairs.
He's like, no, not in here. And so I guess he was able to look online and see that they still had it. And so the dude that was up there had to go bring it.
That's crazy.
And I was like, what's up there? He's like, only like a third of the stuff up there is organized. I'm like, wow.
Oh, man.
That shop even seems like a little unorganized sometimes. So I'm like, imagine what's up there.
It's like my office, but a whole shop.
Are they just like paying the guy that was up there just to try and organize it? I feel like overwhelmed when I'm trying to organize my own shit, which is like a fraction.
That would be hell to organize a comic shop.
I know. I mean, it seems like it's pretty good so far. It'd just be trying to find room for everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Daniel, anyway,
did you hear about the Ed Piskor Red Room thing that happened?
What thing happened?
Ed Piskor did a variant for a book called Red Room: Trigger Warnings that referenced the comic Mouse.
Oh,
and it was not very. It seemed very problematic, and since coming out with that, it like made a whole thing on Twitter, and then the Fantagraphics books decided to like pull that cover.
Which it
did look pretty bad. I was like, this is probably not the time to do this right now.
Did you see it?
I saw it, yeah.
Can you show me?
I don't have a picture of it. Let me pull it up.
Why'd you bring this up and then it's like not show
me? I screenshotted the Fantagraphic statement, but they didn't have the...
So they're like, we're sorry, this is not the thing. So did it look like Mouse or
something?
Yeah,
it was like a
rendition of the Mouse thing?
Directly, yeah.
Okay.
Here it is. Like, that's Mouse. You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so this is what Fantagraphic said about it.
Was it released?
No, it was in solicitation. So,
okay.
The statement says Fantagraphics, Ed Piskor, and Jim Rugg have decided to not publish the variant cover for Red Room Trigger Warnings number 3 that referenced the comic Mouse. Jim Rugg states, I'm sorry for my latest Red Room cover. Oh, sorry. It's Ed Piskor's book, and Jim Rugg did the variant. And he said, I have drawn several variant covers for the Red Room series, and I had fun parodying famous and iconic comics and graphic novel covers, but I realize now that the morally charged subject matter of Mouse made it inappropriate subject for the necessarily over-the-top Red Room treatment, and I apologize for my misjudgment. And then they just say that Fantagraphics is like, I support the artist's decision to pull the cover and all that, so
gotcha.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, Ed Piskor's cool. He's like kind of a legend in a way, in his own right, like of his like little area of comics.
Yeah, he's got the Grand Design stuff.
Yeah, and then he did like Hip Hop Family Tree.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think what they were just trying to do is, like you said, do like a rendition of famous things in the context of Red Room.
Yeah.
And then, and it was like, and simple, then, so it's easy to kind of finish that before really thinking about it that much.
Yeah, exactly.
It could be okay. You know, if it came out, I'd be like, oh, cool, that's Mouse, you know?
Exactly, but, yeah.
That's probably the right move.
I think so as well. Daniel, there's a new Fantastic Four book coming out, and that's going to include Spider-Man, Wolverine, the Hulk, and Ghost Rider.
The Fantastic Eight?
No. There's none of the original Fantastic Four.
Oh, that's the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Wait, why? What's the subtitle?
I don't know. It's called New Fantastic Four.
Wow, interesting. Who's on that?
I don't know.
I'll buy that.
I took a screenshot of it.
I like the idea.
Yeah, me too.
Because it's just
like a random
four. It's like, why? I was hoping they would have the Boo outfits on.
That would be fun.
Because that's fun, you know? Yeah, and do we know who's writing or anything?
The series is by Peter David and Alan Robinson. David, I know from doing like some X-Men stuff.
Yeah.
Alan Robinson sounds really familiar.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, sounds like it'd be fun.
Nathan, we got confirmation from the director of WandaVision that there is not going to be a season 2 of WandaVision.
That makes sense.
Yeah, after thinking about it, like I'm like, yeah, I guess it as not.
A limited series, you know? Yeah. Like, what is she gonna do?
They can get back together or something?
Be with White Vision?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't support it.
No.
What happened at the end? So, Normal Vision went back to being dead and White Vision is just out there.
Did he?
Yeah.
White Vision's the OG Vision.
No.
Yeah.
Well, in the comics, it's White Vision.
No. In like the show, isn't the White Vision the one that the government built from his remains?
Oh yeah, you're right.
Right. And so
White Vision out there and he like regains consciousness.
No, didn't he like get consciousness from the new Vision?
Correct.
So he got like kind of memories and stuff, and I don't know.
He got the...
Because the White Vision didn't have a conscience.
Yeah, the White Vision doesn't have a conscience, and then he absorbed the new Vision. So new Vision doesn't remember anything before Infinity
and
War.
So the old Vision was just the conscience that Wanda thought he had kind of thing? Because since she like conjured him or whatever?
She like conjured him, and so it's just kind of like her idea of Vision.
Yeah.
But he still doesn't remember anything from Infinity War.
Right, because he died.
Or before, because he died. Right. But then...
And then he just flew off somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And then he flew off somewhere. But so that is Vision. That is his body, but it's not his memory. So there's still an impact from Infinity War, which I appreciate. But he's just like out there somewhere now.
Okay. Gotcha.
So, but yeah, it makes sense that there wouldn't be a season 2. I feel like that show is made to be a stepping stone, but also its own interesting limited series that deserves to just kind of like be on its own.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
And she's off in the woods, and she'll be in Doctor Strange, and that'll mean more, and so they'll be in other things.
Yeah, like I kind of expect the same thing for Falcon and Winter Soldier.
It's kind of like a mini-series, Nathan. Like,
yeah.
In a comic. Like where, a spin-off. Here's what they're doing right now, and then we'll get a different one with a different bunch.
Exactly.
And then they'll be, here's what they're doing, and they're the new Fantastic Four. Nathan.
Yes.
Apparently... An adaptation of the comic Irredeemable is in production.
I heard about that.
I stole this from the Weekly Planet podcast. I did not see this anywhere. I heard from them talking about it.
Yeah.
Which seems cool.
That's the Mark Wade one?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Where Superman, but he's bad.
Yeah, Superman, but he's can't handle it.
Finally, we're getting a show where it's superheroes, but and there's a Superman person, but he's bad. And that's what we needed.
An unhinged Superman. We love that.
what a nice concept.
Definitely.
Yeah, if done right, I think that could be interesting, but hopefully they like push it out a little bit because like if it came out today, I think people would be like, oh, I've seen this before, you know, from like The Boys or from Invincible.
Yeah.
Perhaps. So hopefully they release it at a time where it feels like it has room to like breathe on its own because I feel like that universe would be interesting.
Sure.
But hopefully people won't take it at face value for Superman, but he's bad.
Yeah. I mean, I think they'll probably make it different enough to where it works on its own and it's not.
I hope so.
Doesn't remind us so much of The Boys.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Boys comes out like every other year, so they'd have to
maybe do it it'll end. Off year. Maybe it'll end.
Maybe.
I'm so excited for this Boys season.
I'd be so pissed if it just ended in at season 3. There's no way, right?
It might.
You think? The Boys? Isn't it popular?
It's popular.
Like, popular enough? Like
probably. Yeah, I would say so. They announced season 3 before season 2 was even over, so.
That's true. But, like, we like it.
I like
it,
yeah.
In our world, it's pretty big.
I think normal people like it.
Do normal people watch it? Oh, wait, you know what? Oh, yeah, I was in the State Farm office, and people were talking about The Boys. And yeah. I was like, I love you guys all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly. When people at, like, work are talking about it, I'm like, I knew that thing first. I'm better than you. That's what I think in my mind.
Did you guys read the book? It's actually quite better.
Oh, you must love the comic then. Oh, you don't read the comic.
You didn't know it was a comic.
You didn't know it was a comic?
Oh
my God.
Garth Ennis? Does that not ring a bell for you?
Derek Robertson? Are you kidding? Just very pretentious.
Boom Studios.
Yeah.
Does this not mean anything to you?
Did you not know that Huey was based off of fucking
Simon Pegg?
Simon Pegg. I blank on celebrities' names on this podcast specifically, I've discovered.
Yeah, dude, I have this cloaking device that just makes you dumber, makes me sound smart.
Yeah, exactly.
Simon Pegg is hard to remember because makes me think of the other Simon.
Cowell.
No. See, same. It's Simon, working on me now.
Simon Says. I don't know. What other news you got?
And that's all my news.
That's all of my news as well. So let's get into the book that we read this week, Daniel. What was the book that we read this week?
We read The Wicked Plus The Divine, Volume 1, The Faust Act.
The Faust Act, yeah.
Faust Act.
It is by Kieran Gillen,
writing.
Jamie McKelvey.
Artist.
Matthew Wilson.
Colorist.
Clayton Callas.
Letterer.
Yep. This book is very fun.
But what the fuck happened?
So, yes, I would say this book is good. People should read it. But before you read it, you would benefit immensely from reading the back cover first, because it tells you everything you need to know to like come into this.
It does?
Which I didn't do at first. So let me read the back cover first before we even start talking about it.
Ooh.
It just says, every 90 years, 12 gods return as young people. They are loved. They are hated. And in 2 years, they are all dead. It's happening now. It's happening again.
Oh.
That was kind of explained throughout this book. Like,
but not like
a character says it.
It was in dialogue though, and it was explained to you.
And like when I was reading it, I kind of was just like reading it casually, and I never thought like I should pay attention to that part. But I understand the book more after going back and like taking notes on it. But Matt Wilson is such a great colorist, right?
Dude, the artwork in this is fucking perfect.
It's incredible. Like, there's so many points where each part of the creative team shine, like, so well. Yeah. Like, from writer to, like, to Jamie McKelvey to Matt Wilson. Like,
Matt Wilson was already my favorite colorist, but this just, like, it just, like,
it blows
reassured
my mind.
Me. I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, it is.
This is, like, probably one of the only books where I'm just like, man, the coloring is really good here before, like, the like, line work, you know?
Yeah.
Which they're both really incredible, but there's just like Matt Wilson's so good at just, I don't know, making things so visually interesting. Even like in the beginning when there's people just like sitting in a room, like the lighting of it is very like intense.
Yeah.
And stuff. So it's awesome.
These covers are like top tier.
Yeah. There's some like,
it's just people looking at you.
It's just,
but yeah, it's like
colored very nice.
What's it mean to be symmetrically perfect?
Yeah.
You know? And so it's just amazing to me.
Yeah, very good.
So good.
But this is a very high concept book that it's like talking about gods, but they live among us. But the twist,
they're all pop stars, Nathan.
And the twist here is that they're all pop stars and they're going to die in 2 years. But they come back after another 90 years. And then people also know that these are gods.
Yeah, it's like public knowledge.
Yeah. That, so people just know that there are gods just kind of like around.
So what I kind of struggled with is like, do gods just take someone's body?
I don't know.
When they're resurrected, or are they born as gods?
I think when the resurrection happens, they just like take over a random person's body.
Okay, gotcha.
I'm not sure though,
because
I could be wrong.
We'll get into that, but
we will. But there's also a lot of names
that are really fucking hard. I had to look up how difficult to pronounce some of these.
Yeah, same. But anyway, issue one, the like beginning scene is in like 1923. And we see some people, which we later know as gods, and they're sitting at this round table with 12 chairs, but there's not 12 people there. It's only like 4 people. And then an old lady named Ananke. And so the oldest one, who is Ananke, asks if there's any more gospel. And when no one responds, she leaves. And then the remaining 4 gods raise their hands. They all snap their fingers. And Ananke watches the house explode. So it kills those like remaining 4 gods.
Ananke.
Ananke?
Yeah, I looked it
up. Oh, it's not Ananke. I thought I had that one.
You're really close. Yeah, no.
Okay, Ananke. So it's like that. I think that does good to set the stage because
you're like, what the fuck's happening?
There's like, yeah, it's like this is some weird cult shit. And then later you figure out that they're gods, but then also it's like they have this weird system and they also like snap their fingers when things explode or. They snap their fingers and then things explode after, so it's like, okay.
I think that was just Lucy who's doing that.
No, they all did it here.
Oh, never mind.
They all 4 snapped their fingers, so.
Yeah, their godlike powers is just snapping and blowing stuff up.
Yep. Sweet explosion page. I like that.
Yeah, really good stuff.
Yeah. So in the present, we meet Laura, who's a normal girl that just kind of sneaks out to go to a concert for Amaterasu. And at the concert, she like makes eye contact with Amaterasu.
We can
and
just call her Amy.
Sure.
Because
is that what they call her
Lucy
in the book?
Lucy calls her that.
Amy, okay. So Laura is like there at the concert watching Amy sing, and she makes eye contact with her, and she just has this like intense euphoria, and then like passes out. It's like she was on drugs or something, like at a concert, because everything was just so like magical and stuff. So
she's explaining the concert as just like all climax.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
I love the double page spread though, which is like gorgeous. And I just like that you can like see her like silhouette through Amy's like dress and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the way that it's colored, there's just like enough over all of the rest of the characters in the crowd. So where you only focus on Laura as well. I think that was done very well.
Yeah.
So yeah, so she goes to this concert, she passes out, and then when she wakes up, she meets Lucy, which is short for Lucifer, which I think is fun.
Yeah, I like that too.
And she has like snapping powers too, but she uses like light her cigarettes and whatnot. But Lucy invites her to meet Amy.
I like her hair a lot. I'm like, I could probably do that.
I do too. It's like a nice, there's like a sweet stripe in there.
Yeah.
To the right. So Amy's being interviewed by someone named Cassandra, where we find out that these gods live for 2 years before they die. And then they get reincarnated 90 years later. But Cassandra just doesn't believe it. She says it's all a hoax, right? And then during this interview, they're all ambushed by gunmen from like the building over, trying to shoot Lucifer. And then Lucifer gets pissed and uses like her snapping powers to make the gunmen's heads explode, which is a really cool looking effect. This is like my favorite effect in the book from like Matt Wilson, where he just has like this really violent red, yellow, and green like a lot in there.
And then it makes like all the other colors like just like white because of how bright the explosion is.
Yeah, basically like faded. So it has this like really violent head bursting effect, which I think is awesome.
I guess Lucy can also just stop bullets from hitting her.
Yeah, well, she's a god.
Which is really sick.
Yeah. Which like maybe she like has to be conscious of the bullets coming at her in order to do that and like activate it.
Sure.
If she was fine from getting hit by bullets, then she didn't need to get like tackled out of the way, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It might be something that she has to.
Yeah, she's got to be able to like, focus on them or whatever.
So Lucy allows herself to be arrested and she goes to court, and then she makes fun of the judge saying that like she only clicked her fingers. Like, I can't be taken in for just like clicking my fingers, you know?
Yeah.
But when she like when she snaps her fingers again as like a joke, the judge's head explodes, but Lucy's like, oh fuck, I didn't do that. Like, I was just joking. And then the people take her in.
Yeah.
And so, but like, you kind of set yourself up for that, you know? Why would you like mockingly click your fingers and then have someone's head explode? And then he's like, oh fuck, I'm not, I was just kidding, you know? Like, that doesn't look good.
Yeah. And she looked like clearly shocked. Like, she's like, oh shit.
Yeah, she did.
I thought she did an accident at first.
Yeah, I thought she did too. And then she's like, that wasn't me. And then Laura was there at the court and she's like, I believe her. I don't think it was her. So
this is like my first impression of like The Wicked and Divine.
Yeah.
Like as I read this first issue like a couple years ago, I was like, wow, what is this all about? So.
And then you never continued.
Then I never continued until this week.
I had no idea what this book was about. I didn't know it was like about gods. I had no idea what it would be about in general.
You just like really didn't think about it?
I really went in just dry. Like I had no idea anything about it.
Isn't that fun?
It is kind of fun, yeah.
Yeah, and then just, see, I knew what I was getting into, and then just like to, I guess, like get it, you know, like kind of understand why it's like so much. It's normally on every like gotta read.
It's very popular, yeah.
And so I wanted to see, I don't know if there's like maybe a point where people just start like loving this shit, because I remember people were like going off on like Twitter and shit on when the last couple issues came out.
Really?
So yeah, I think
by the end of this trade there's like a twist at the end and I'm like, ooh, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
But like, so if I was picking it up week to week, I would continue picking it up, but I don't think I would finish it now, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's, what is it, like 40-something issues
something
in total?
Like that, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, issue 2, after the trial, Lucy asks for a non-key.
Yep.
Is that what it was? Okay, yeah. And then Laura overhears that. But later on the news, another member of the Pantheon, which is like the group of the gods, they call themselves the Pantheon. One of them named Baal, B-A-A-L, is that how you say that? Just Baal?
It could be Baal.
Baal?
Baal, Baal, whatever you want.
I think Baal sounds better.
Yeah. So we're not just saying Baal all the time.
Yeah, Baal shows up. One of the gods named Baal shows up and he like gets his word twisted like on the news, so he leaves. But Laura's parents watch this on the TV and they don't really know that she was, that Laura was there in court. So Laura tries researching Anonki to figure out who that is, but she can't find anything. I like that Laura has like a cracked screen, like on her phone when she's like looking up like Anonki, trying to figure out more, like her phone screen is cracked.
I didn't even look at that.
I think that's funny. But I also like that the Google results are all just links that's like, that just say site with no relevance. Cause it's like, it's supposed to show that Laura's not finding anything about Anonki. So like they just physically wrote, yeah, they physically write, this is not helping me basically, which yeah, I think is cool.
Am I going to have to go onto the second page of search results? Oh God, no.
So Laura goes to visit Lucy in jail with the lie that Anonki has a message for her. Like that's how she gets in. But while she is there, Lucy talks about Anonki and about the Pantheon. And she tells Laura like her reincarnation story about when she like first met Anonki. So we see all that go down in like a flashback. And then Lucifer then offers turning Laura into a god if she helps break Lucy out.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole scene with like Anonki, and then she like makes eye contact with her, and then she like is falling through like this endless pit of just like her Anonki's face. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really cool looking, honestly.
Yeah. I was like, oh, this is creepy.
Yeah. Also, I like how she got arrested and like the police put these like finger stents on her.
Yeah. They're like anti-snapping.
Yeah. Like, did they just have those? Did they have to go get some somewhere? I can't imagine.
Did someone weld these really quick to, yeah, to stop her?
Did someone create a custom order for like, two of these?
If like they're taking her away, she can just snap all day to like kill everybody.
Yeah, she could, but now she can't.
Yeah, I guess Anonki is like kind of like a caretaker of like the Pantheon.
Yeah, of all the it seems like she doesn't die.
She's not the one that's reincarnated. The other ones are.
Yeah,
and she's the one that like just chooses who.
So she doesn't.
Body gets taken over by them. Or something?
That seems like the case. Yeah, it doesn't seem like she dies every 2 years. I think she just chills for 90 years and then decides to pick somebody then.
So. She looks old as dirt. So
yeah. So Laura wants to help but needs help doing it. So she goes to Cassandra, who was interviewing in the last issue, and Cassandra has like a degree or something about all this like gods and like religions and stuff. So she's
mythology.
She's clearly very knowledgeable on the gods. And intrigued by the mystery of who killed the judge, she decides to help. So Laura gets pointed to make contact with another god named the Morrigan, who has an underground concert gig that she does. Mm-hmm. So when Laura goes to that concert, we see a different god carrying the Morrigan's head. And that's how that issue ends.
His name is Baphomet.
Baphomet, yeah.
Baphomet?
I think probably just Baphomet, maybe.
Shall I look it up? Could,
yeah, probably. This is like a really small thing that I don't think I would normally notice, but Matt Wilson like colors in like the shadow of like the glasses on Cassandra. And I think that's really cool. Like it's like a very small thing. Yeah,
on the cheeks or whatever.
But like, I was like, I don't think I've ever seen that. Cause it helps like form the face.
He probably has glasses.
Yeah, he probably does.
Yeah.
Baphomet. All
right. Baphomet. We got it.
All right.
That's like
why did that take so long?
Took a whole 30 seconds. Baphomet, I like that more, because Baphomet just sounds like a weapon.
Yeah, that's fair. Baphomet.
Like an old-timey rifle or something.
But yeah, I like when Laura's like going to the underground concert gig, there's like a bunch of like heavy like negative space, and it's just
there's a whole page of black.
Like, you don't really need, you know, you don't need like 100 panels for just like going to a concert, so I thought that was an interesting like design choice that they did.
Yeah, I don't like this like character design for Baphomet, just because like he's just like a douche in like wearing black and stuff. He's got a skull belt buckle.
Yeah, the skull belt buckle is a little much.
He's got a leather jacket with no shirt underneath, so you can see his abs.
Yeah.
He's got like a goat necklace.
And black pants.
Some aviators.
Yeah.
Like a big old douche.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, this is the douchiest character in here, probably.
Yeah, he really is. That's supposed to be like on purpose, but yeah, they really like went all out with it.
There's some sort of like, I don't know, it kind of reminded me of some sort of like, since they're going down into like the subway or whatever, maybe that'd be kind of representative for like underworld kind of thing. So maybe there's some sort of underworld like gods,
yeah,
sort of thing. So
like they're going to hell.
Yeah, going to hell. And so I was like, I feel like he could look scarier.
Maybe.
I think it's
he's
just
got
like
some sharp teeth, like a vampire.
Ah, even better.
Yeah.
I think I just like the characters that have cool makeup. Honestly,
dude, honestly, me too,
because those are the ones that like are more recognizable, and
like Amy has like the shit around her eyes that are like super colorful, and I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah, Yeah.
But yeah, this guy's cool. Just a douchebag.
And then even Lucy's got like a little bit of stuff.
How Laura, when she's going to the concert, she's like explaining the myths of like the Morrigan. And one of them is, if you get a picture of her, 9 times out of 10, you'll see a picture of the person that you love at the time of their death instead. And I'm like,
yeah, that's fun.
That's some like mystical God shit. That's like, what a stupid rule, you know?
Yeah, I thought it was just about to be like a vampire. Like, they won't be there.
Yeah, you know? I know. But there's, but like,
no, it's like
the person that you will ultimately love, it's going to be them dying and how they die.
Imagine
in that picture.
You have like one of those disposable cameras and you have a bunch of family pictures at Disneyland. And then you go to a concert. It's just those, how your wife dies. Or something.
It's crazy. So yeah, issue 3. This god holding the Morrigan's head is Baphomet, making the severed head of the Morrigan talk and like praise him, which is also douchey.
Yeah, no, what the fuck?
And then it gets a little confusing, but I had to like look up what this was. So the Morrigan appears, but she appears in a different version of her called Badib. B-A-D-B. I think it's Badib.
I thought it was Bad B.
Bad B. She's a bad B. I'll call her that. That's fair.
Badib. Like I know what Badib. It says, but like it was like the bad version of her.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's just Bad B. I don't care. I don't know.
I like Bad B. I think we should go with that. So Bad B has like these crow powers that she used to fight Baphomet, and then Baphomet fights back with like ghosts of people that have died in the subway. And so there's a whole god fight, and then the police come to break up the whole gig, and then Baphomet's like snaps and one of the cops just like bursts into flames. And so then the Morrigan turns into like the nice version of herself named Annie and heals the cop. But then like right after, she like gaslights him into saying that she was never hurt in the first place, which I thought was interesting.
Uh-huh.
And then she turns back into like the bad version. So there's like a lot of shit that happens here.
Yeah. So she's got these like multiple personalities or whatever, and like that her clothes change, and like her makeup hair change, and her powers change,
and her hair changes. The hair, bad B version changes. Has Medusa long red hair, and then the nice version is just bald or a shaved head.
Yeah,
which is weird. I love, again, like just like the snap effect of like the cop bursting the flames, because there's just like a ton of colors there.
Yeah.
Also, when like the gods are just like fighting each other, they like set the stage with making like the whole tunnel like kind of like on fire on the roof.
Yeah,
which is kind of cool. And then
like
a web
of fire kind of thing.
And then when Baphomet uses his fire or his powers, it like turns green. I just like that there's like a really nice clash of colors that works really well for the scene.
The only thing I didn't like about this issue was like the dialogue between them when they're fighting was so tedious. I was like, what are you talking about? They didn't seem like real sentences.
They were talking kind of weird, I guess.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if that's just how gods talk to each other or if it's like battle dialogue or whatever. It was just like, I just like hated reading it. I was like, what are they even saying?
They're saying a lot. Yeah.
And I'm like, is this a performance? Are they actually fighting? I just like didn't know what this was, you know?
Yeah.
So what comes from this is like Laura just like asks the Morrigan if Baphomet killed him. He's like, no way. We were lovemaking.
We were fucking at the time.
and so
Laura's like, well, that's the only lead I had.
That's that.
Yeah.
She's got an alibi.
Yep.
So it was just like, I don't know. She just took that and like, all right, I guess cross them off the list or whatever. Yeah.
So then Laura like tells that whole fucking story to Cassandra, who then talks to Lucy, I think, on like a video call or something. And they're like, who else could it be? And they identify the next potential killer as Bal. Because Lucy slept with Bal's boyfriend. And then right as they're like, okay, let's try for Bal. Bal just like shows up and he's like, why are you talking behind my back?
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know why he was just like there or knew to be there, but he's there.
Yeah, aren't they at like a library or something?
Yeah, like why would Bal be there? But yeah, by this point, I like finished this issue and I was like, I don't know who I'm supposed to like pay attention to.
Yeah.
Because there's a scene where Cassandra and Lucy go back and forth naming different people, and I'm like, oh god, who am I gonna have to like remember from this, you know?
So like a couple you've been introduced to, and I think they show you all of them eventually, you know?
Yeah,
but it's like the ones that she has like reason to believe that they did kill the judge to try and frame her.
Yeah,
but yeah, so it's just like another thing that was just kind of annoying was like the names are like ridiculous. They are real like names, and I guess I can appreciate that, but they're kind of annoying.
It's hard.
I don't know if like there's other names that we just kind of gotten used to, like Ozymandias and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And we just like know that now, you know, and it's,
yeah, I guess
when I first read that shit, I'm like, what is this?
I always think it's just hard to introduce a bunch of characters in like the first issue or first couple issues.
I think the ones we remembered were just like Bal and Lucy and Laura, because
by the like, end of this, I was like, I know Lucy, I know Laura. I didn't even know Cassandra until like the fourth issue.
Yeah, I didn't know that was her name. I thought she, reporter girl.
Yeah, I thought she was just like the stuck up like mythology person.
Yeah, but when it's like all the names are kind of dumb like that,
mm-hmm,
it's a little
tough. But we got through it.
We got through it. Issue 4.
Yep. So Bal brings Laura and Cassandra to like the Pantheon meeting spot, but only lets Laura in to talk to the Pantheon people, which includes Anonki, Amy, and then like a couple other gods.
Is this his house?
Yeah, it's like it's at like some sort of museum or like his house, but Bal has like a painting of himself on the wall. He's very, they do a good job of clearly making him like pretty narcissistic.
Yeah.
Because he's got this like grand painting on the wall that's like super tall, and it's just like a picture of him in a suit, and there's like Cupid angel things kind of like around him and stuff. It looks very like Renaissance, you know?
Yeah, dude, that's hard.
But I really like how they colored it as well, because it seems like faded, like it would be paint as
so
well.
So like I actually saw this in the credits on the first page. That's like a guest colorist.
Yeah, that's Nathan Fairbairn or something. Who's,
oh, it is?
Who's also a really good colorist.
Yeah, I know him.
But yeah, they like commissioned a different colorist to color this particular painting part of the book.
Yeah.
So that it would not look like Matt Wilson's coloring, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah,
I think probably would have been a mess trying to like pay the people out appropriately.
Yeah, it's just like,
but I think that's really cool. I think it was like something that I noticed as like a really cool effect. So
I didn't really think about it that much. I'm like, oh, maybe just Matt Wilson can just change up his brushes or whatever.
Yeah, or just like make the whole thing a little bit brighter or fuzzier or something. But
yeah, then we go to this Tron room or whatever.
Yeah, so all of the Pantheon meets in like the secret Tron room, which
just
is,
think of Tron and then imagine a room
if built it was by Tron.
Tron or
yeah.
Something.
It looks like Daft Punk is performing here.
Daft Punk is here.
Yeah.
They're right here.
Yeah, they are. They do look like Daft Punk. Yeah, there's two Tron gods that don't really like, they don't really contribute anything. They're just kind of like there, but they have like this black and green suit, and then there's a black and pink suit, and I was like, that's Tron, there's no way. But anyway, Anonke, basically the whole conversation with Laura and the Pantheon boils down to Anonke thanks Laura for helping out, but ultimately says that anyone in the Pantheon could have framed Lucy for killing the judge, so they should just leave it alone until the killer makes a mistake, and then they'll just like circle back for it.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, they should keep Lucifer in prison so that the people don't turn on the gods. Which I guess if they do that, it'll stop them from like another recurrence.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that they say, because like there's been generations of recurrences, but I guess that is hinged on the people having a positive outlook on them or something.
Yeah, I guess they only survive to inspire. That was like something that they said in that.
Which is an interesting concept.
Because, yeah, because like their performances are like described as like flawless.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I guess like if they're pop stars in music, then they, I guess, inspire other musicians
they're
like
looked upon well
for 90 years to come.
Which is interesting.
Maybe if they weren't like pop stars, you know, if they're like other, if one of them was a pop star.
Do you hate any pop stars? Exactly.
Dua Lipa.
You do?
Yeah.
I like her music.
I do not.
Oh, well, I would assume most people like her music.
Probably.
Yeah. But yeah, I just think that that's an interesting concept, that like they would reincarnate as people that are looked upon very fondly, you know?
Sure. But like maybe one of them be a pop star. One of them be like some sort of artist. One of them be like
like Gandhi
or something. Yeah. One of them be Gandhi or something.
Yeah, exactly.
One of them just be just famous just because.
Maybe someone is just like in the Olympics.
Like a Kim Kardashian. Yeah. Olympian. Yeah. That'd be sick.
No one hates an Olympian.
Yeah. No.
No one's like, I fuck that Usain Bolt guy.
Yeah.
People are like, yeah, good for him. So yeah, Laura goes to Lucy and explains Anonki's message, and then Lucy gets pissed off and uses her abilities to burn her way out of prison. I guess that's something that she could have done
the whole time, at
any time.
Yeah.
Like the finger stints didn't matter at all.
No.
Which is funny. So she burns her way out of prison because Lucy was not about to spend her short 2 years of like living in prison.
And then her eyes like changes to the color red. I don't know if you noticed that.
Oh, I did notice that, but that's cool.
Because I thought that, because at the last issue, I was like, have they been red the whole time? But no, I just saw that they've been blue.
Yeah, I guess when she's going crazy. Yeah. I really like, well, when she like first breaks out, it like triggers the
fire alarm.
The fire alarm. So there's like sprinkles. The sprinklers are going off. The sprinkles are coming down. Yeah, the sprinklers are going off, but there's like an outline of like water that's not hitting Lucifer, which I think is a cool effect.
It's like the bullets.
Yeah, it is. So I thought that was fun. So yeah, Lucifer is getting pissed and she's like, I'm not going to spend my time in prison. I'm just going to go do whatever I want, which is a big no-no. Laura even tries to stop her and she said
she's going to go get a coffee.
Yeah, she's like, I'll be fucking damned if anybody tries to stop me from getting my caffeine.
Yeah.
Don't even talk to me until I've had my coffee, she said.
My coffee.
So issue 5, Lucy goes to get coffee, but yep. She leaves like this path of destruction in her wake. And so Laura and Amy try to stop Lucifer, but Lucy says that she would rather die than like go back to prison. So she's like, I'm just going to be free. And then Lucy is then attacked by Baal and another god.
He like comes from like the sky and like he goes off Thor and just smashes her.
He gets like these electric powers that I didn't know he had.
But yeah, there's tons of lightning.
I think he mentions that he's like a sky god, so it kind of makes sense that
he has like electric powers. I wish it kind of would have been fleshed out in the first trade, like what they're all able to do in a way, and like what makes them gods, because like it's all like ambiguous until this point.
Yeah,
because we don't like, even see all of them.
Yeah, we don't really. Like, there's one that looks like she just turned into, like, a tiger or something. I don't know. Minerva, is that who it is?
Sakmet.
Sakmet, yeah. I don't know what she does. But anyway.
She, like, just tackles Lucy. She's got tackle powers.
Yeah, she did tackle her twice in this book.
I think it's, like, speed. Probably strength.
So, they're, like, fighting Lucy, and then Laura runs to the underground gig thing again to go get the Morrigan for help. Who
she goes on like subway tracks
and like almost dies, but then the Morrigan saves her.
Yeah,
I thought that was an interesting scene. But so the Morrigan uses the crows from before to help Lucifer escape to Cassandra's house. So when Lucy, so like they all like regroup at Cassandra's house, and Lucy's like, "Man, I really fucked up, didn't I?" And they're like, "Yeah, you did." So Lucy leaves to go hide out with the Morrigan in like the subway. But when she does, Ananke is there, like just outside the door, and she snaps her fingers to explode Lucifer's head and kills her.
But this explosion is like way different.
It is really different. It's not just like a normal explosion. It's like spaghetti ball looking thing.
Yeah, it's like an electrical spaghetti ball.
Yeah.
But her head is definitely gone, and she does bleed like a lot.
It's very bloody. It's very clear that she's dead.
Uh-huh.
And so Laura like begs the Morrigan to heal her, like turn into the nice version and heal her. But the Morrigan cannot heal the dead, I guess. That's like a thing. So later, Ananke gives a statement to the press as the leader of the Pantheon, announcing that her existence, she announces her existence to the world, because I guess the people didn't know about Ananke.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was established in the first issue, because there's nothing about Ananke.
Yeah, she was never in like the public eye.
Yeah, so Ananke announces her existence to the world, and then she's like, the gods will handle the situation with Lucy.
Yeah, because they're supposed to like police their own.
Yeah, which is what like, Ananke can't. Yeah, and so that was kind of dope to like see gods kill each other with like the miracle, which is what they call the snap.
Yeah.
I wonder why Baal didn't just do that, if they can all do this like snapping power.
I don't think they wanted to kill her. And maybe I just think like stop her. Ananke was just thinking that to get her to stop.
Yeah,
it was just like her call, I guess. I don't think any of them would have killed him.
That's fair. Yeah,
but we didn't even find out who killed the judge.
We haven't yet. No, it's like the ongoing mystery. I think it's like, why the last man? Like, you don't want to figure out what happened to all the men in the first trade, do you?
You find out in the first issue, and then they die.
I know, and that's what happened in this first issue. The judge died, and it wasn't Lucy. So clearly, there's some issues going on with the gods, and like, why would somebody frame Lucy? Kind of deal.
Yeah.
But anyway, Laura, like after all this, Laura quickly becomes famous for her part as like a normal person being a part of like God drama. So she's like on the news and stuff. And one night, just in her room, she lights a cigarette that Lucifer gave her and she like snaps her fingers like mock Lucifer, and it lights her cigarette, and she realizes that it's not over yet.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very like, it was a really dope way to end it. Like, that was a sweet twist, and it like fades to black after she like accidentally lights a cigarette.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh fuck.
So I guess
she's gonna get more involved now.
But yeah, potentially Lucifer was able to just actually transfer powers to her, even though she said
she did, but then she said that she lied to her, or maybe she's like somehow reincarnating as part of Laura.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? But it's very much like a, I feel like it was kind of like a Jupiter's Legacy kind of twist where it's like
the main character dies.
Yeah, like the main character dies, and then it's like, oh, so that's what this book is going to be about, kind of deal. Like this whole trade kind of sets the stage for what's going forward, and there's like a twist at the end, kind of deal.
Yeah, I don't think there's too many books where I'm like fucking hooked on like the first trade.
Yeah,
especially if they're like the long form kind of ones where they go for, you know, a couple of years.
Yeah.
So I think I'd be willing to give it another trade at least to kind of care for these characters a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because I could give a shit about like Laura. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The one thing I guess that I didn't really believe fully or never really understood is why Laura cares so much about Lucy.
Because
she just like meets her for like 5 minutes and then they all get shot up and she just like goes to her court date for some reason.
I mean, it's like if Lucy was like Post Malone. You just wanna help Post Malone because Post Malone knows you.
Is Lucy also a pop star?
Yeah, I think so.
What if Post Malone's a god?
Oh man, probably.
Yeah, everybody likes him, right?
Yeah, pretty sure.
Yeah, so he'd be very successful in this universe.
Yeah, dude, I saw him like talking to just like he's at some like I think it was some sort of autism kind of like charity event, and he was just like going around talking to like everybody, and that seems awesome.
He was like playing Apex Legends.
Yeah.
On like stream with like another Apex Legends streamer and he was like he's really good at the game, actually much better than I could be if I were like to grind that game.
Yeah, I thought he was like a Call of Duty guy.
Yeah, but there's other games out there too.
Sure are.
Anyway, so that's the end of the first trade. Pretty fun. I liked it.
Pretty fun. Interesting.
Let's get into Back Matter Matters, Daniel.
Back Matter Matters.
And there's like, this is the best Back Matter we've had in a while, I would
say. It was pretty good. Tons of variants, Nathan.
Yeah, tons of variants. We love seeing those. We got some from Jamie McKelvey, Brian Lee O'Malley from Scott Pilgrim,
Jordy Belair.
Yeah. Chip Zdarsky does a cover.
He sure does.
We love him. Stephanie Hans, Kevin Wada.
Becky Cloonan,
of mm-hmm. course. Mm-hmm. Love that. So does Matt Wilson color like one of the Jamie McKelvey's thing, and then Jordy Belair also does one? Is that what they were saying?
I think on the issue one variant,
because he might
have done like the art and then Jordy Belair colored it.
Because it says Matthew Wilson, Jordy Belair, and under that it says issue one color variants, and it says Belair bottom right.
Bottom right. Okay, I think that's the one where it shows the four. So maybe Jordy Belair just did the bottom right one, and then Matt Wilson did the other ones.
Oh, that could be it.
Because I'm not sure if he does art, does he?
Who?
Pencils, Matt Wilson?
No, it was Jamie McKelvey that did the issue one cover.
I kind of would have preferred to see the names with the covers.
Me too. Even with the like distinction, I'm still a little confused.
Chip Zdarsky, I could see from a mile away.
Yeah, I think that was written like, right? Because this came out in like 2014, and I think that was when he was doing like Sex Criminals.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So
it looks like a page in Sex Criminals.
It really does. This could be a page in Sex Criminals, and I wouldn't know.
Yeah. He just did like a cover for that are the writer and the artist.
Mm-hmm. I like the Brian Lee O'Malley one a lot. It shows a picture of Laura just like hanging out in her room or whatever, and she's got posters of like the gods in the show.
Yeah.
Or in the comic on her wall. He's like really good at just, I don't know, making simple art like that.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Chip Zdarsky one, Stephanie Hans one. Kevin Wada seems familiar. I think he did like covers for Elektra or something. Do you recognize him?
I'm not sure. It looks like almost like Deadly Class.
It could be something like that as well.
But I'm not sure.
So that was a good one. Becky Cloonan's is also really good.
Which one's hers?
I love seeing her covers.
Oh, yeah.
She did a run of like really good Moon Knight covers that I appreciated.
Nice.
And then we go into there's some back matter of like what they did to promote the book, which yeah, I like think a is a really fun story. Like they
teaser pages or whatever.
Yeah, there are some teaser pages, but there's also there's like Jamie McKelvey took pictures of himself going to a comic shop and pre-ordering the comic book that they used in like promotional material. And so he like made like a 4-panel comic of how to pre-order his comic at like a comic shop. And there's like really funny dialogue. And he's like, there is one where he's like, important note 3, you do have to, or you don't have to go to this comic shop, but you can go to any standard comic shop and mm-hmm. pre-order. So I thought that was like a little fun thing that they did. There's also like a compilation of panels that explains like the universe in like 2 pages, which also would have been really nice to read like before going into the actual book.
I guess it's a smart thing to have
for like promotional material. It makes sense.
Yeah,
but that would have been nice in like the beginning of this trade, because I think I would have understood the whole concept a lot better.
Yeah.
And then they explain the Bal painting, which uses what's his name, Nathan Fairbairn, F-A-I-R-B-A-I-R-N, Nathan Fairbairn, something like that.
Fairbairn, yeah, Fairbairn.
So that's cool. And then also just like promotes their other work together, which is Phonogram. Jamie McKelvey did a book called Suburban Glamour at Image, and they also did a book called 3.
Yeah, this dude is like way too good to just be on like one thing. You know?
Exactly.
I'm like, who is this?
Like,
who did this?
Me too.
It's so good.
Like, now I want to check out Phonogram because it looks like that one's like music based or something, which seems really cool. Like, 3 looks like it would be pretty cool.
Like, these character designs look like they came out of, like, a drawing book on, like, anatomy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, as of how, like, flawless everyone's, like,
proportionally very perfect. And then just, like, the designs of them as well. Like, the way that Lucifer, like, her hair, for one, perfect, yeah. is great. But, and like, her overall style is, like, wearing a bunch of white. And then there's, like, even, like we were saying, Amaterasu's like makeup and stuff. It's just
a lot of the
people's makeup is really good.
Yeah.
So very fun book.
Definitely. So
what would you rate this book, Daniel?
I'd rate it like a gotta have it with like a rainbow sherbet. Cause there's a lot of colors in here really do it for me.
I like that.
There's not a lot of stuff you can mix in with rainbow sherbet. So we'll just like keep it how it is, but still love it. You know, normally when I finish like rainbow sherbet, I always want like more,
just like a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah. Like a little bit more. So that's kind of how I feel about this book, because I want to like things that are long, you know, so I can like binge them. So, and because of how highly regarded this is, I want to, you know, read it and just get it.
It is a very like popular comic, like independent comic.
Yeah. So
is it done?
Yeah, it's been done for a couple years.
Okay.
So
I would rate it a box combo from Raising Cane's.
Okay.
Like
four fingers.
You get 2 sides. You know, obviously you gotta
sub the slaw extra toast.
Sub the slaw extra toast. Yep.
Yep.
But to keep it colorful, you get a cane sauce, you get a ketchup, and you get a mustard if you want.
Do they even have? Oh, they have Louisiana hot sauce there.
Oh yeah, get that too,
dude. I went
put it all in there.
I went with Nana and Tata and like our cousins like after church once, mm-hmm. and like it was like 10 a.m. They're like, "You want to go to Cane's?" I'm like, "Do they have breakfast?" I was about to be really excited if they had like just like eggs that you can have with chicken.
With chicken fingers,
which would be really fucking good.
That would be good.
They didn't. It was just normal Cane's, and like mix Louisiana sauce into the Cane's sauce.
Wow.
And it's very weird.
That's a formula that I never would have even attempted.
I think cane sauce is perfect the way it is. And I don't think I need everything to just be spicy.
I think the way that the cane sauce complements the chicken is very similar to how Matt Wilson complements Kieran Gillen in this book. Jamie McKelvey, yeah. In this book, to where it's just like a perfect combo.
Yeah.
I would never want to mess with that formula. Because it's just so perfect and so beautiful to look at.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about the chicken fingers.
Both cooked to perfection.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how I'd rate this.
Both delicious.
Yeah.
That's very funny.
Do you want to get into the pull list?
: shove it in your box?
Yep.
Sure do.
The pull list. What did you shove in your box?
All right, Dan, what did you get this week? I had a small week.
So I picked up the Dark Knights of Steel. The little upstairs thing. Yeah, the mysterious upstairs.
I want to sneak in and go upstairs.
Be like, can I see upstairs? Can I just look around?
Yeah, I've been here. I've been going here how many years? I can't just see upstairs.
Yeah, it's been like 7 years I've been going to the store. So I got Saga number 57. And very important. I think I go to the shops when I'm like, oh, Saga's out. I have to go now.
Yeah, that's funny.
Got Black Hammer Reborn number 10.
Nice.
I picked up like other stuff, but it was just stuff that I said I was going to get last week.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I didn't go last week, so I picked up what I said I got last week, which is World's Finest and one other book. What was it? I can't even remember.
Wow.
But this week I picked up Saga. I wanted to read that like last week, but I can't find my issue 55.
Really?
Yeah, I like lost it somehow.
How'd you lose a book?
I don't know.
Did you organize it?
Yes. I organized my whole collection.
Did you put in the S's?
I don't think I would have put it in the long, because I have a short box of stuff that I haven't read. So I don't know why I would.
So you haven't read 55?
I haven't read 55, 56, or the one that came out this week.
Oh, speaking of, I read 56 and 57, so I'm all caught up now.
Is it wonderful? I saw the cover for this one is like the Will and Lion Cat. So I'm like, oh God, what's happening here?
Yeah. So 55 is good because it's the exercise one. 56, I enjoyed because it like, you know, keeps the ball rolling. 57, I'm like, okay. And then it didn't really like end on any kind of cliffhanger or anything.
Well, so, yeah, it's the middle of the, it's the, middle the trade. So.
Well, his trades are six. So, yeah, we might get like another filler-ish.
Yeah.
But
I also picked up Human Target that came out this week.
Oh, yes, I did get that.
It's got
number six before the
hiatus. Yeah.
Hiatus.
But it comes back in like September.
6 months.
Yeah, 6 months. It's not awful. They're going to come out with a trade.
Yeah, I mean, I'm behind three issues on that book, so maybe I'll read it by then.
Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, I know it is. I just like...
This one's got Guy Gardner, everybody's favorite Green Lantern, on the cover.
I know. I saw that. You know, I saw him on that. I'm like, I'm going to get the other cover.
Really?
No.
The other cover is kind of cool.
No, the Guy Gardner one is probably the coolest, I think.
Yeah. That's cool.
Anyway, did you read anything else, Nathan?
I sure did, Daniel.
What did we read?
I read Silver Coin 8 and 9. But forgot to read 10.
Ooh.
In my mind, I was like, I'm behind 2. And who, I knew that I needed to read 8.
Who wrote 8 and 9?
Vita Ayala did 9. And one was Matt Rosenberg.
Oh, okay.
I think 8 was Matt Rosenberg, 9 was Vita Ayala.
I just listened to his episode on Stegman and his amazing friends.
He's podcast. Yeah, he's awesome.
So I listened to all the episodes where they have like guests and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Google a picture of them so I can like imagine them talking, you know?
Yeah.
And no one ever looks like what I think they look like, you know? Rosenberg's got like a beard and glasses and stuff.
Huge
like
beard,
that.
Yeah. Always wears a hat.
Yeah. Seems like a cool guy.
Yeah.
Daniel Warren Johnson seems like a lot younger than I thought he was, just based off of his art, I guess. I don't know.
Just
I
just like
thought he
plays
was older.
Guitar and stuff, you know?
Yeah. I just thought he was older.
Young at heart. Yeah.
He looks like he's like 27, honestly.
You thought he was younger than that?
No, I thought he was older.
Oh.
I thought he was like 40. I don't know why. That's just what I thought.
Oh, you thought before you saw a picture of him that he was going to be like 40?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
I thought he was like Jason Aaron age.
Oh, you know what I mean? Gotcha.
I don't know why. I just think they're vibes, I guess, in their writing.
Maybe.
But anyway.
I like that podcast.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm listening to the Scott Snyder one right now.
That's a good one. Yeah.
He's got a very soft voice.
He does.
Okay. The thing about that podcast is like, I like it a lot. They're cool people and whatnot. But Johnny Cage is terrible at talking.
He is. Well,
he's good at talking. He's not great at listening. He cuts people off like all the time.
Yeah.
And his like, he starts talking and he doesn't like stick with an idea. He like cuts himself off to like go off on some other tangent.
Hey, man.
I'm like, what are you trying to say?
As long as he keeps making great comics, I'll listen to what he's got to say.
Yeah, I'm so glad he's got an editor for comics because like I would have no idea what he's
trying
to say. One
issue of Ben would be like 3 story arcs in one.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe it's just some of the episodes I listen to, but,
But
anyway, I like that podcast. I like Donny Cates. Donny Cates, come on the pod.
Yeah, you should.
Interrupt me.
Yeah, I would love to have you interrupt us.
Interrupt Nathan.
Issue 9 of Silver Coin was really interesting because it was based off of like a real world event.
Really?
Yeah. It was like a thing in Chicago that was going on where people would hire, like since the market or whatever was so bad in early 1900s of like buildings in Chicago, people that own buildings would hire people to burn down their buildings for the insurance like benefit of it.
Yeah.
And like this has, it like plays into that, which I think is really cool.
Interesting.
I also read Daniel World's Finest.
Oh yeah.
By
Josh Williamson,
Mark Wade and Dan Mora.
Okay. Oh, and we know Dan Mora.
Yeah. It's
what's
awesome.
Dan Mora in?
Dan Mora was in Klaus. I say it every week.
Klaus.
And he's a fucking delight. I think he's like shot up just following him on Twitter, seeing his art. I think he's like top three like favorite comic artists for me right now.
Really?
His work is delightful. It is just like eye candy.
I think I just need to see more of it because I just know Klaus.
Well, that's great, Daniel.
What are you reaching for, Nathan? Did you buy something from him?
I want you to read World's Finest. I brought it here for you because I read this. And one, it's awesome. It's a blue and gray Batman, which I enjoy a lot.
Ooh.
It's colored by Tamara Bonvillain.
Bonvillain,
who's colored some things that we've read. But yeah. There's something that happens in this book where as soon as I saw it, I was like, Daniel would love this shit. So I want you to read it because it's an absolute delight.
Okay, I'll read it like today.
I've got it here for you.
I'll read it by the next time.
You can text me as soon as you figure out the thing that's in there.
This is a very handsome Superman.
Isn't it? It's just like gorgeous.
I just want to give a kiss.
Everything is like perfect in there. Everybody that's drawn is like drawn so well. Batman looks great. Robin looks great, you know.
Gordon's perfect.
And it's just like a fun, simple concept by Mark Wade, who just like clearly loves these characters and the whole DC universe.
Mark Wade is like really high up there for me.
Yeah, yeah. He's a delight.
Because like, I don't think I've read anything that I like didn't like. You know what I mean?
I think he's done some Avengers stuff where I was like, I just like fell off of it. But
yeah,
like of like the entire history of comic book stories, he's got some that are like way up there for sure.
Sure.
And he's also like, I think he wrote the earliest, my first comic book that I read.
Mark Wade?
Yeah. Which actually, I guess Bone was technically the first comic book, but when I went to go buy a comic book, it was written by Mark Wade, which was The Brave and the Bold, and it was a Green Lantern and Flash comic.
Oh, cool.
And it was written by Mark Wade. And it's like from like the 80s or 90s or something. So he's been in the industry for a while.
Yeah.
And the fact that he could still produce super fun work like that.
Yeah.
Is awesome. So yeah, I want you to read that. It's very fun.
Sick. I kind of wish this book, like I know Dan Mora is like great now, but I just love the team of like Chris Somney and Mark Wade.
Yeah, they're great too.
Because that's like.
That's a power team for sure.
Yeah. Top three power team, Nathan.
Yeah. What other power teams like?
Nathan, Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Top power team.
Of course.
Maybe a King and Garrods. Maybe a...
King and Garrods, perhaps.
They're top five easily.
Yeah.
I would say.
I'm trying to think of other ones. Because I only got one more slot for top three.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to think of ones that have like multiple things together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a loaded question.
We'll have to think about it.
Yeah.
Well, what did you read, Daniel?
Just Saga. I just got caught up on
that. Okay, cool. Did you watch anything?
Game of Thrones. We're on season six now, Nathan.
That's fun.
Yeah.
I didn't watch anything. Actually, I did. I discovered a YouTube channel, Daniel.
Oh, great. Another one?
And I love just discovering a YouTube channel and just binging the fuck out of their content, especially when it's made well. I found this YouTube channel called Summoning Salt.
Okay.
And you know how I was like getting into like video game speedruns for like a little bit? And I was just like watching whatever ones I could find?
Yeah.
This guy is a YouTube channel where instead of like just focusing on one particular speedrunner, he does these very well written and like edited video essays on the history of a game's speedrun or of a game's speedrunning culture, you know? So when I was watching
a singular game
okay. And like the history of its speedruns.
Okay.
And he's got like different games on there. He started with like Punch Out and like really old NES games, but I watched like a couple of them because they're really interesting. But the one that I like the most is Wii Sports Golf. There's a speedrun of Wii Sports Golf.
How?
It's very interesting, actually, because the goal is to just complete all 18 holes on Wii Sports Resort Golf as fast as you can. And it's not even like just being accurate with your shots, because speedrunners discovered that if you have a shot that makes it close to the hole, it like plays a replay that takes more time than if you were to just purposefully make a bad shot close to that replay area rather than make a shot that makes it immediately into the hole, because the replay actually wastes time. And so it's just like a really well done history of the different speedrunners that are a part of it and like the evolution of their strategies of things like that.
Yeah,
and it's really fascinating, actually. And he like went over the history of like when the game got released, the first speed runs, and he like digs up these super early speed runs.
Have you been speedrunning that long?
Huh?
Have people been speedrunning that long?
People have speedrun since like Mario, Super Mario.
Ah, damn.
Yeah. He has a really good video on Super Mario as well.
Okay.
Where he like basically explains that we've reached the human limit on that game. It is not possible to make it any faster in that game.
That sounds right.
Because he explains concepts called tool-assisted speedruns, where people can like download a tool and like actually physically input when to do things on a controller, and like a computer just plays the game essentially for you, so that you can figure out theoretically what the fastest time is.
Yeah.
But anyway, on the Wii Sports Golf one, it was like really interesting to see the evolution of like people fighting for like the top spot.
Mm-hmm.
And what new strategies there would be. Like, there's a strategy where someone would hit the ball, disconnect the controller, and then when you reconnect it before the ball hits the ground, you'd be able to hit it again as like a glitch.
Oh.
Yeah. And so it was just like,
it's crazy that people just try think of that all stuff. This shit.
Yeah. And like, so
what if I unplug it?
And so like when that happens, the community is amazing, and they like post it on this forum. They're like, I just found this new trick. And then so people just like theoretically like create faster speed runs. And you know how in the game there's like wind?
Yeah.
People figure out the algorithm to make the wind work in their favor, which is crazy, because the wind goes in like 8 different directions. And obviously if it's going towards the hole, it helps you. So they figured out like how to make the wind like work in their favor and stuff too. And he explains all these concepts like super well, so that even if you don't play the game, you'll understand what's going on. And it's a very good YouTube channel. It's called Summoning Salt again. There's a great Mario Kart video, which is super interesting, and like the history of Mario Kart speedruns and stuff like that. So pretty cool.
I think I was thinking about that because I want to get a Switch, and I may or may not be getting one for my birthday. But I don't think I would just like get Mario Kart, you know, for like me to play and like just finish.
It is a great like party game.
Yeah, I think I need to be playing someone that I can beat and then just talk shit immediately. You know, it's just like. It's that part of me.
I think like...
Because I don't want to like practice it because that gets boring.
It does.
Actually, you know what? That's a lie. I was obsessed with the mobile game like Mario Kart.
Yeah.
Because that was like kind of online, I think. And that was really fun. And I did that on my breaks like religiously.
Yeah. And I think if the only way you could speedrun it is if you have like a just undying love for a video game. Because the level of understanding for like some of these video games is... like insane. It's like beautiful in a way, like the way that the amount of time that people put into it, and when they make like this incredible breakthrough about new like glitches for the game or like new shortcuts or whatever, it's super cool. And he puts like a lot of suspense in it as well.
Interesting.
So I liked it a lot, Summoning Salt.
Cool.
The Wii Sports Golf one I liked, and the Mario Kart ones I like a lot
for sure.
Did
you watch anything else?
I didn't, but I played a game.
What was that?
It's called Prop Night.
Prop Night. Okay.
Are you familiar with Dead by Daylight?
Is it a zombie game?
No. It's a game where there's like licensed like movie monsters and killers. Cool. Like Jason and Freddy Krueger and stuff like that.
I know Dead by Sunrise, which is a side project band that Chester Bennington had.
Oh, really?
When he was like in Linkin Park. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
But they're okay.
Dead by Daylight... it's a game where you can either play as a killer or a survivor. And if you're playing as a killer, you're trying to find survivors in like this closed off map. And the survivors are trying to like fix these generators without being seen by the killer and killed by them. And if they fix enough generators, then they can power like their escape, essentially.
Okay.
And there's a bunch of like really famous killers in there, like, like Jason or Freddy Krueger, or like the monster from Stranger Things, whatever that monster is called. The Demogorgon's in there, or like Pyramid Head from Silent Hill. I played Prop Night, which is kind of like a copy of that game, but also includes the prop hunt like kind of game style.
So,
and Prop Hunt is where you can turn yourself into an object in the game and like disguise yourself as that object. So like as like a book or like a chair or something, and somebody has to find you. So it kind of like blends those two games together where there's a killer and you're trying to fix these generators to get out, but when you see the killer coming towards you, you can just turn into like a book or something.
Yeah.
And so I played it with all my friends I normally play games with, and it's hilarious because there's a lot of like just random things that you can turn into, like a rubber chicken or like a stuffed animal of like a pig or something like that, or just something ridiculously big like a canoe. And so when they like hit you and they discover like that canoe wasn't there before, you can run away as like a canoe. And so it's just you like flipping around as like a canoe trying to escape a monster.
Yeah.
And it's super fun.
I like the...
There's like a,
the prop hunt on like
Call of Duty. Yeah, it's that essentially.
I saw someone like go on like a bridge once and he was like a plant.
Yeah.
And like he was like setting himself. And I guess you can plant more of the props to make it look real, I guess.
Yeah.
And so he just planted a couple of these plants in order to look like it's like a pattern in order to hide. And that was really clever.
Yeah. It was really funny just turning into like the biggest things you can and trying blending in.
So the monsters like chase you?
Yeah, the monsters chase you and
Pyramid Head is really fucking scary.
He is.
I've seen him before, but I didn't know he had like a name and I didn't know he was Silent Hill.
Yeah.
But yeah.
He's on Dead by Daylight. But on the prop hunt game, it's just like random monster looking things.
Okay. So
not the licensed one, but Dead by Daylight's the one that is the more popular one. But someone mixed that in prop hunt and it's like a really fun game.
Nice.
So yeah, very fun stuff.
Good stuff.
Did you watch anything else? Read anything else?
No, dude. Sarah's just been making me watch Game of Thrones. So
nice.
That's been my life.
Chugging along on that.
Chugging along.
Well, Daniel.
Well.
What are we going to read next week?
It's a great question. Probably Moon Knight.
Moon Knight. Finally Moon Knight. We would be remiss not to read the Declan Shalvey Moon Knight. That it seems like this one is very heavily influenced on that run for.
Mm-hmm.
So let me. It's called From the Dead. It looks like this.
Yeah, Moon Knight.
This guy right here.
Read for free. Yeah, no, I see it.
Yep. This is the first Moon Knight run that I read, and I'm like, Moon Knight's pretty cool.
Ah, shit.
It's not like the story is interesting. It's kind of formatted a little bit different, but I think the design aspects of this book alone make it a really fun read.
Mm-hmm.
So it's incredible. And I love Declan Shalvey. So I think we should read this.
Yep. 6 issues, mm-hmm. 137 pages.
Yep.
I knew we were going to read something Moon Knight and I knew you were the person to tell us. So now we're here.
There's other versions of Moon Knight that are good. There's a Bendis one that I enjoy.
Bendis did it?
Cool. Yep.
So of the Moon Knight runs, this is your favorite?
I like this one the most, yeah.
Okay. How did Jeff Lemire do?
I like him, yeah. His was good. I would put that as like second just under this one, I would say.
Okay.
He did it with Greg Smallwood, and so he has a very interesting take on Moon Knight as well.
Did it look as good as like Human Target?
Human Target is him firing on all cylinders 100% of the time. It's like unbelievable the work that he's producing in Human Target. In Moon Knight, it's still very interesting, and he messes with a bunch of different art styles in there as well, with like the different dissociative identities that Moon Knight has.
Mm-hmm.
So I do like that one, but I think this is the one that kicked off like a big Moon Knight craze.
Did you like the Jed McKay run?
No, that's the current one.
Oh, is it?
That's the Nacho series, unfortunately.
I thought that was the Max Bemis one.
No, the Max Bemis one I didn't like at all.
Oh.
Which is why I like Moon Knight, because every single time there's a new run, it's just completely different.
Does Moon Knight have guns?
Not normally.
Yeah. Well, Greg Hurwitz has something to say about that.
There's a one that
Final
like,
Francis U, Vengeance of the Moon Knight. Have you read that?
Let me see it. Let me see the cover. I have not, actually. I think that's one of the ones that I haven't read. Let me turn around again.
Lionel Francis U on art?
No, he did the cover.
Boo. Don't you hate that?
It's Alessandro Capuccio, I think, that's doing the art on the current run. But that logo design is from the current run.
Okay.
There's a David Finch drawn Moon Knight, which is also pretty fun, but it's just a normal Batman kind of story. That was before he had like dissociative identity disorder.
Yeah.
But Daniel.
Nathan.
We got some recommendations via email
last
week. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Does that mean we're not doing Moon Knight?
No, next week. We're going to do Moon Knight, but the following weeks, we have a couple different recommendations from fellow trade waiter or comic book enjoyer named Sam. You know who you are. He says, hey, Nathan and Daniel, I hope you're both doing well. I just wanted to reach out and tell you guys that I really enjoy your podcast. Thank you, Sam. I really
love Sam?
No, I don't know Sam.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
I really love the routine of reading a trade every week. And in terms of books that I would love to hear you discuss on the podcast, I have several recommendations that I think you would both enjoy.
Wow.
And let me tell you, these are banger recommendations.
Have you read them?
I haven't read any of these that he sent us.
Wow. How many did he give us?
He gave us 4. Okay.
Okay.
He gave us The Weatherman, and he says, I know you guys read/reviewed Shirtless Bear Fighter. This one is by some of the same guys, but is a little more serious and a little more sci-fi-ish.
This is a deep cut fan.
I know, yeah.
Shirtless Bear Fighter was like episode 5.
It was like the 3rd episode or something, I think.
Yeah, it might have been.
Yeah. So he said, also Nathan Fox is one of my favorites. You've probably seen The Weatherman. It was like a more recent one. Like,
it sounds familiar.
It was one of those books that when it was coming out, I was like, damn, I should read this. It looks really good. So that's okay. A great recommendation.
Weatherman. Is it one word? Oh, yes. I've seen this.
Yeah. So I was like, that's a great recommendation. He also gave us Luther Strode, and he says the gore is absolutely insane in this series. Also, the first trade is just a wild origin story. So I looked at that one, and that one is drawn by Trad Moore.
Oh, cool.
And I love Trad Moore. I didn't even know that Trad Moore did this book called Luther Strode, so that's a great recommendation. Love me some Trad Moore.
This looks like a anime almost, but like American, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like Image.
It looks really interesting, so I think that's one that we should get to.
Yeah, for sure. We'll do all of these.
I know, yeah.
We'll do everything people ask.
In a row.
In a row, yeah.
He gave us Descender, which... We love Jeff Lemire. We love Dustin Nguyen. Yeah, he said it's a great sci-fi in this stuff. I've read that one, but not all of it.
I think I read the first trade.
I think I read the first few issues, but
we'll definitely get to it.
That's always one that I'm like, we should get to that because I love Jeff Lemire, and that's like one of his big ones.
I'm always thinking like I should read all of it, but then I just like never do.
Anyway, yeah. And then he says, I don't know if you guys are looking to read a bit more than usual. I know that you guys did the big one for Saga, but some of my absolute favorite graphic novels come from Brian Lee O'Malley. The Scott Pilgrim series is amazing and just pure fun. Another good Brian Lee O'Malley one is Lost at Sea. And he said, this one doesn't really get a lot of attention, but is truly a very beautiful book. And they said, again, the show is awesome. Keep up the great work. So thank you, Sam. Those are the kinds of recommendations that are exactly what we're looking for.
This Lost at Sea looks cool.
Yeah, it does. I looked that one up as well.
10-year anniversary edition?
Yeah.
Apparently it's been out. That's cool.
And like, I can't believe we haven't read any Brian Lee O'Malley because he's got like... other ones too that are he's pretty got, big like, Snot Girl,
two whole books. Yeah, I mean, I didn't know he wrote like Lost at Sea or whatever.
Me neither. I haven't even heard of that one.
I've only ever heard of Snot Girl and Scott Pilgrim.
So banger recommendations. I appreciate nice. That
thank you, Sam. We appreciate it.
Yep. Any other recommendations?
Us figuring out what to read gets boring sometimes.
Yeah.
I like being told what to do.
We can, if you want to give us recommendations, you can reach out at tradewaiterspod@gmail.com.
You sure can.
You could also tweet at us if you'd like at tradewaiterspod on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
You can check out some of our TikToks at tradewaiters.
The one and only.
And I think that's it for this week.
Yep.
So good stuff, everybody.
Good stuff.
Later.